I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Path to Peace. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is back in the Middle East, and he's making an appeal to both Israel and Hamas. A major concern. Lawmakers demand action in response to the growing number of protests on college campuses. Hats off to them. Analysis of the best graduation speakers for Catholic schools this spring. And drawing a crowd. The Holy Father visits an art exhibition as part of his one-day trip to Venice. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of St. Catherine of Siena, Doctor of the Church. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden's top diplomat says a long-sought ceasefire in Gaza is now all up to Hamas. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is once again back in the Middle East, his seventh trip there since the war broke out in October. Blinken also says Israel must do more to increase the flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Yes, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's visit to the Middle East coincides with deadly Israeli airstrikes overnight in Rafah, another missile attack by the Houthi rebels targeting a ship, student protests on U.S. campuses, and Hamas still holding around 100 hostages.
In Rafah in southern Gaza, multiple people reported killed in Israeli airstrikes. And as the war continues without end, the U.S. sends its top diplomat back to the region, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, trying to secure a ceasefire and the release of hostages, tells the World Economic Forum gathering in the Saudi capital.
Hamas has before it a proposal that is extraordinarily generous. On the part of Israel.
In his comments, Blinken, who will also visit Jordan and Israel on Tuesday and Wednesday, emphasized it's time for Hamas to make a decision.
The only thing standing between the people of Gaza and a ceasefire is Hamas. They have to decide, and they have to decide quickly.
As Blinken urges Hamas to accept a deal, President Joe Biden pushes for Israel to open more humanitarian corridors into Gaza. He spoke to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Sunday. The White House says the two leaders also reviewed ongoing talks to secure the release of hostages, together with an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. With renewed concerns about the conflict spreading in the Middle East and colleges around the country imploring student protesters to clear out tent encampments, the White House saying today,
we're going to continue to say all Americans have the right to peacefully protest. At the same time, we have to call out any hateful rhetoric that we hear. Anti-Semitism is wrong.
Biden and Netanyahu also discussed Rafah. The president wants Israel to avoid a large ground offensive in the area where many Palestinian civilians seek shelter.
President Biden also scheduled calls today with the leaders of Qatar and Egypt to discuss the situation in the Middle East. And tomorrow, President Biden heads to Wilmington, Delaware for a campaign event. And on Wednesday, former President Donald Trump will hold two campaign events in Wisconsin and in Michigan. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And here with more insight on the negotiations taking place in Cairo is Gaith Alomari, a senior fellow at the Washington Institute's Irwin Levy Family Program on the U.S.-Israel strategic relationship and a former Middle East peace negotiator. Gaith, great to be with you today. Thank you for your time. Let's talk a little bit more about this latest proposal, your thoughts on it, and what stands out to you.
All right, thank you very much. Actually, it's an interesting one because in terms of substance, in terms of the content, it's not very different from previous proposals. I mean, the same outlines, one day of truce for every hostage released, no permanent ceasefire, no end of the hostilities afterwards. What has changed is really the context. And all of the three major parties are now under pressure. And actually, something might come out of it. The Israelis are under pressure because domestically, the families of the hostages are basically saying this is a major priority. This is the first priority. So the government is under pressure. And the U.S. is also pressuring Israel. Hamas is under pressure as well. Military pressure because of Israeli actions and the threat of an attack on Rafah, which is becoming more imminent, as well as under Hamas's own backers in the region, Turkey and Qatar, are under pressure from the U.S. to deliver. And the U.S. is under pressure. both from its Arab allies. Blinken right now, the foreign secretary of state, is in Saudi and he's being pressured, but also for domestic reasons. We see demonstrations in campuses, etc. So I think the context has changed. It's more likely right now, but of course we'll only know once a deal is struck.
Yeah, and you brought up Secretary Blinken, and he called this latest offer to Hamas, quote, extraordinarily generous. Gaith, would you characterize it that way?
But I think, again, what we see from the Israelis is movement on two specific issues. One, initially, the Israelis insisted on 40 hostages being released. Now reports indicate that they're willing to accept only 33. So that's a move. And the other move is Israel indicates that it's going to allow some of the people who are right now in the south of Gaza to move back to the north of Gaza, which Israel was not willing to do earlier. But beyond that, as I mentioned, the fundamentals have not changed. And most importantly, Hamas wants one thing. Hamas wants a permanent ceasefire because it knows that the hostages are literally its human shields. And if it gives them up, then its leaders, who are hiding in bunkers right now underground, will be exposed. So from that respect, from the core issue that Hamas wants, it has not changed. But certainly the Israelis have moved a bit in terms of their demands.
Yeah. And how important is it to get this deal done? I mean, do you think Hamas can even come up with enough hostages to fulfill the deal?
I think this is exactly why the number went from 40 to 33. Of course, we don't know the intelligence on this, but there are many indications that actually many of those hostages, unfortunately, are no longer with us and no longer alive. So for Hamas, it's very unlikely that it can produce anymore.
And do you think, Gaith, that a deal could be the first step in creating a lasting peace and ending this war?
I think this is exactly why people are pushing. I mean, different regional and international actors are pushing for something like this. I mean, first of all, obviously, any easing of the really tragic humanitarian situation we see in Gaza will be welcomed by all. This is a priority on a human level. But on a diplomatic level, the hope is that these days of quiet, the 33 days, 40 days, etc., will create the space for a diplomacy that is not being conducted under the pressure of daily fighting and conflict. And the hope is that it will produce a permanent ceasefire. However, Hamas has to make some very tough decisions. I think it's a point of almost international unanimity with some outliers like Qatar, like Turkey, like Iran. But everyone understands that there is no place for Hamas after the war in Gaza. Hamas can end the war today if it decides. And Hamas has to decide if it's willing to leave Gaza, its leaders, its fighters, then this could be the first step towards ending the war. If not, I fear that after the temporary ceasefire happens, there will be a resumption of the war. But the hope, at least in Washington, in Riyadh, in Cairo today, is that these 30 to 40 days of truce will give the possibility for a serious diplomatic initiative in that direction.
Okay, thank you so much for your time today and for your insights. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'll leave the encampment or be suspended. That was the message from Columbia University to pro-Palestinian protesters on campus. Activists at Columbia defy the deadline as over 50 tents stayed up beyond 2 p.m. The warning set by Columbia stated that if the demonstrators signed a form committing to abide by university policies through June 2025, they could finish the semester in good standing. This comes as Columbia and other various schools around the country race against the clock to clear out encampments ahead of graduation. This follows a breakdown in talks between protesters and the Columbia University president. Well, protests also erupted at the University of Texas in Austin. Police moved in to remove demonstrators at an encampment. Arrests were reportedly made on the scene following a dispersal order by campus police. As the protests intensified nationwide, Congress is calling for crackdowns. Some lawmakers are even demanding that federal funding and universities' tax-exempt status be revoked. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us from the campus of George Washington University, where the protest continues. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Since late last week, more than 60 hours ago, students here at George Washington University have set up this encampment. Officials gave them till Saturday to leave. Well, that came and went, and even more protesters showed up.
Intifada! 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 Late last night, protesters removed barriers as law enforcement tried to push out demonstrators accused of disrupting life on campus. According to the university, more than 200 people have joined the demonstration.
So our demands are immediate divestment from corporations complicit in the ongoing genocide in Gaza, a protection of pro-Palestinian speech on campus, and dropping any charges against pro-Palestinian student organizers.
The federal government, mostly through the Education Department, gives more than $200 billion in American tax dollars annually to institutions of higher learning. Now some lawmakers warn that may soon end.
There is no excuse for not enforcing the law with regard to discrimination and against certain groups, in this case Jewish students. It's got to be dealt with. It needs to be dealt with in a very direct and, I would argue, forceful way.
We need to revoke federal funding to these universities if they cannot keep control. We need to revoke these student visas for these violent protesters. You don't have a right to be here and to do this, but Jewish students have a right to be able to peacefully attend classes.
Democratic Congressman Richie Torres is pushing a bill that would impose third-party anti-Semitism monitors on campus paid for by universities. Quote, the monitor would be appointed by the Secretary of Education. Failure to comply with the monitorship would result in loss of federal funds. Several universities like USC have decided to cancel graduation ceremonies.
The sooner these so-called elite universities get a hold of their campuses, the better. But I have been disturbed by the level of anti-Semitism in this country. I thought it was over a long time ago.
Several students I talked with say that they are concerned if they get arrested, it could hurt their chances of landing a job in the future. But in the same breath, they say if they don't take a stand now, nothing will change in Gaza. Reporting from George Washington University, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Numerous law enforcement officers have been struck by gunfire in Charlotte, North Carolina. Police say members of the U.S. Marshals Task Force came under fire during an investigation. Multiple victims were taken to the hospital. All voters in Togo headed to the polls today to vote in delayed and controversial parliamentary elections. It will serve as a test of support for a recent constitutional change. The new amendments will give power to a prime minister position, while the role of president will largely be ceremonial. The current president is angling to become prime minister. The Togo Electoral Commission has banned the Catholic Church from deploying election observers to the polls. All right, now to Scotland's government, where the first minister has resigned following political turmoil within his own party.
Therefore, after spending the weekend reflecting on what is best for my party, for the government, and for the country I lead, I've concluded that repairing our relationship across the political divide can only be done with someone else at the helm.
Hamza Youssef's Scottish National Party has faced a campaign finance scandal. The First Minister's support for transgender issues also caused division in his party. Youssef, Scotland's first Muslim leader, resigned rather than face a no-confidence vote in Parliament after breaking a power-sharing agreement with the Green Party. He will still serve in Parliament after stepping down. Well, Spain's Prime Minister says that he will stay on the job after taking several days to consider his future. Socialist Pedro Sanchez adds that he will continue, quote, with even more strength. He shocked the country last week by announcing that he was taking 5 days of reflection to consider his future. It comes after his wife faces corruption charges. 52-year-old Sanchez became prime minister in 2018. At least 45 people are dead following a dam collapse in western Kenya. The rush of water carried with it mud, rocks, and uprooted trees. Vehicles on Kenya's busiest highways became entangled by the debris. Kenya has been facing flooding due to heavy rains since mid-March, as more than 200,000 people have been hit by the floods. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including stepping up to the microphone. Jonathan Rumi and Father Mike Schmitz are both prominent Catholics, but that is not the only thing that they have in common. We'll explain. Welcome back. A group that promotes and defends faithful Catholic education is releasing its report card for this spring's college graduation speakers. In line for high marks are Ave Maria University in Florida. Its graduation speaker is Father Mike Schmitz, best known for his Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year podcast. The Catholic University of America, they selected Jonathan Rumi, the actor who portrays Jesus Christ on the TV series The Chosen. Rumi is also outspoken about his Catholic faith. However, not every Catholic school received passing grades. And for now, we turn to Patrick Riley, founder and president of the Cardinal Newman Society. Patrick, great to be with you today.
Thank you, Tracy. First,
tell us why the Cardinal Newman Society decided to put out this report card and also what it says to you about our Catholic colleges and universities.
We have been doing this now for three decades, looking at the commencement speakers and honorees at Catholic colleges and universities. It says a lot about who your friends are. These are choices that are made by the institutions. They spend the entire year trying to identify the person who they think best reflects the institution and will best appeal to their students. And so who they choose says a lot about what the priorities are at these institutions.
Yeah, and we mentioned two schools on the report card that have good faithful commencement speakers. What are some of the others, and who are their speakers? That is, and I understand a Catholic Supreme Court justice is speaking at one of the colleges.
Yes, isn't that wonderful? Justice Alito will be speaking at Franciscan University of Steubenville. And, you know, that's an institution that for years has been leading in faithful Catholic education, and this is a great honor for them. I'm really excited to be at Ave Maria next weekend. My son will be graduating there and get to hear from Father Schmitz. But a number of other institutions. We've got Harrison Butker, who is the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, and is also very outspoken on his pro-life and Catholic views, and so he's a great person to honor. We've got Tracy Rowland, who's an outstanding theologian, speaking at Christendom College. We've got Carl Anderson, who has done such an amazing job as the former Supreme Knight of the Knights of Columbus, will be at Thomas More College in New Hampshire. And so these are just great examples that show exactly what the priorities are and the type of people that these colleges and universities want their students to be.
Yeah, and Patrick, first off, before I get into the next question, congratulations to your son, and God bless him.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
I want to talk about the other colleges now that really did not get good marks. Let's talk about that, who those speakers are. And there's also an interesting ceremony taking place at two universities, I understand, mm-hmm. called Lavender Graduations. Tell us about that.
Yes, the Lavender Graduations, this is something that we're seeing all over the country at many of the institutions. It's a sort of a separate ceremony for LGBT-identified students. And it's a very, very bad trend at a Catholic institution that's trying to teach responsibility with regard to sexuality and marriage. The event in itself does not directly contradict Catholic teaching, but it does highlight and celebrate a lifestyle that's frankly very dangerous and likely very sinful for the individuals involved in it. So it's just a very bad move for these institutions. Both this is happening this year at Georgetown University, which has done it for many years, and at Loyola Marymount University in, on the other coast. There are probably other institutions doing it that we've not yet seen.
Yeah, and what were some of the other commencement speakers that stuck out to you that you would not consider in line with Catholic teaching?
Yeah, fortunately, it's only a handful that we've seen thus far that are really of concern. Former Congressman Joseph Kennedy, who was very strongly pro-abortion, pro-contraception in the bills that he co-sponsored, is speaking at my old alma mater, Fordham University, par for the course, unfortunately. Sister Simone Campbell, the radical feminist activist, who opposes making abortion illegal, is speaking at Sacred Heart University in Connecticut. We've got some interesting choices with regard to actually choosing former or current Catholic university presidents to speak. And in fact, they made our list because they're not great examples for the students. One of them at Notre Dame is the former president, Father John Jenkins, who has been largely responsible for corrupting the Catholic identity of the institution and allowing many inappropriate things, including the honors in 2009 to pro-abortion President Barack Obama, despite the president strongly opposing that. And then the Fordham University's president, Tanya Tetlow, has been public in her support for same-sex marriage and for gender ideology. And she is speaking at, where was it again? Oh, at Spring Hill College in Alabama. And so, you know, these obviously are cases where our concern is not in calling out the individuals. That's between them and their pastors and the church, and it certainly ought to be done. But our focus is on why are these Catholic colleges and universities deliberately choosing these people out of anyone they could have chosen to be their commencement speakers or to receive honorary degrees.
Well, Patrick, we have to leave it right there, unfortunately. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing this with us. We appreciate it. God bless. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, historic visit. Pope Francis becomes the first pontiff to visit a prestigious art exhibit in Venice. For many in the Orthodox world, this is the start of Holy Week. Yesterday in Romania, the faithful celebrated Palm Sunday with a procession to the cathedral. And in Russia, Patriarch Kirill blessed pussy willows because palms do not grow in the region. Most Orthodox churches use the Julian calendar and will celebrate Easter this weekend. Well, Pope Francis made the most of his time in Venice. He met prisoners, artists, and young people before celebrating Mass in St. Mark's Square. EWTN Vatican News correspondent Colin Flynn has more.
A very good evening, Tracy. Well, for his first trip of the year, Pope Francis traveled to the iconic Italian city of Venice, famous for its canals and gondolas. But the Holy Father began his trip on terra firma on Giudecca Island, home to a female prison. It's also the location of the Vatican's pavilion at the Biennale Contemporary Art Show, which is featuring works of art from some of the inmates. Pope Francis is the first pontiff to attend this international exhibition, which takes place every 2 years in Venice. And surrounded by their paintings and their poems, the Pope met with the inmates. And in his speech, he urged the women to rebuild their lives brick by brick. Many cried as Pope Francis acknowledged some of the harsh realities of living behind bars, overcrowding, violence and suffering. But he also took the opportunity to offer words of inspiration, saying that prison could be a place of, quote, moral and material rebirth, a chance to see the, quote, unsuspected beauty in others around you. Now, following this, he also asked the prison service to offer tools for the detainees' spiritual, cultural and professional growth and reintegration. Afterwards, the Pope got a ride in a patrol boat to the Basilica of St. Mary of Good Health. That's where he met with around 1,500 local young people. The Holy Father reminded them how precious they were in the eyes of God and encouraged them to always help others, to be a gift for others, he said. He also told them to, quote, turn off their TVs and open the gospel, get off their cell phones and encourage other people and encounter them. Now, Pope Francis concluded his visit to Venice in St. Mark's Square, where he celebrated Mass with around 10,000 people in front of the beautiful St. Mark's Basilica. And during his homily, the Holy Father talked about Venice's enchanting beauty, but warned against the dangers of climate change and called for, quote, carefully made choices to preserve our environmental and human heritage. He said that if action was not taken to stop climate change, the very city where he was standing in, Venice, could cease to exist. Pope Francis pleaded once again for peace in the world and an end to suffering, especially in places like Haiti, Ukraine and the Holy Land. On May 18th, Pope Francis will visit the northern Italian city of Verona on the occasion of the 14th Festival of the Social Doctrine. And he will also visit the Italian city of Trieste in July to close the 50th Social Week of Catholics in Italy. In Rome, Colin Flynn, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. We leave you tonight with scenes from Saturday's March for the Martyrs right here in Washington, D.C. Good night and God bless.